Where today is going to be also, it's the end of Kotzer, so it's going to be different, it's not going to be so much of a Gemara share, it's more going to be just the practical side of things when it comes to Kotzer and harvesting. So a lot of the practical issues, a lot of the major practical issues are not biblical prohibitions, they are mostly rabbinic prohibitions. Unless you have like a great desire to cut off branches from trees on Shabbos, it really doesn't apply so much. But we'll see how it does apply on a rabbinic level. So just to get into the derisas, the Surah derisas, the biblical prohibitions, if you look at the first source here, the Ramah says, Umutar lahamad anfe ilonis b'mayim b'shabbis, u'bavad shaliyu b'ham prachim b'shushanim shehem niftachim milachluchas hamayim. Obviously, you definitely can't cut off a branch from a tree. But let's say you remove a branch from the tree. So then you... Well, this is the wrong Ramah that I wanted to quote. But he's discussing the fact that you're allowed to put them in and you allow them to grow. I think there's a Ramah earlier. I think it's Shin Lam Vav Ches, which says that once they're cut off... It's the wrong Ramah. Once they're cut off, so then you are allowed to continue cutting, you're allowed to remove from a broken branch. You have a broken branch, you're allowed to continue removing it from that branch. So for example, I think we discussed this on Monday, if you have a case of grapes on the branches of the grapes, so then you're allowed to remove grapes and have grapes on Shabbos. There's no problem of kotzer. And so if you go through our various definitions, we had four different definitions for kotzer. We had removing it from its source of nourishment.
Right.
We had, so this is not removing it from its source of nourishment, because once you cut it off from the branch, so the branch is no longer providing the grapes with nourishment. So that's the first definition.
Removing it from its place that it developed.
Removing it from its place that it developed. So this is somewhat questionable whether it's viewed as still the place where it developed, because it's no longer connected to the ground. It's not connected to the branch, which was connected to the tree. Now it's just the grape, which is connected to the branches. But the branches are themselves.
Look at each grape as an individual thing, or do you look at the bunch of grapes as
a single entity?
I think it's Shin Lamed Vav Ches, if I remember correctly.
It has to be each grape individually.
Yeah,
but in that case, you are removing it from where. Okay. If you look at the entire bundle of grapes as a single entity, then
yeah, I think so.
It's already been removed.
Say again?
If you were to view each grape as its own entity, then you are, in fact, removing it from the place that it grew. Whereas if you view the entire bundle of grapes as a single entity, then it's already been removed from where it grew. So therefore, by taking a single grape off, you're not doing anything.
Well, even for each single grape, it was already cut off from the tree. So for each single grape, you're not removing it from its.
It's still attached to the thing that it grew from.
So also for the whole group it's still attached.
No, it's not.
As a group, it's not attached.
You pulled that bit off the vine. I thought that bit had already been pulled off of the vine.
Yeah, you got the whole bunch of grapes.
Oh, you're saying you view that whole group together as just one entity.
Right, that bunch of grapes is a single...
Yes, that's what you want to say. That whole group is one entity, and therefore to remove one grape from that entity would not be a problem, because we just view it as part of that entity? Is that what you're saying?
Which has already been removed from its source of growth.
Yeah, so that potentially is the question. But we say that it is mutter, so it seems like it's not really connected to... If the definition were to be that it's about removing it from its source of growth... So then you would have to say, if you also hold that it's allowed, that you're allowed to remove the grapes, so then you would have to say that it's no longer viewed as connected to its source of growth. It's possible that we don't pass on like that opinion. They do, like I know the Bir Halacha, the Mishnah Berurah there, does discuss what happens if it's like slightly attached still to the vine, but it's not completely attached to the vine. And so he says that it depends on whether it's still getting nourishment from the vine or not. That's what the Bir Halacha says. So it's clear from the Bir Halacha, from the Mishnah Berurah, that the definition is based on getting a source of nourishment. It seems to be, at least the simple explanation of that is that it's based on getting its source of nourishment. because he says that it depends on whether it gets nourishment or not.
What is that suggestion? Like the tree is, the branches
is half cut off. Yeah, it's half cut off. Yeah, that's the situation. Yeah, that's the situation there. Our third definition is just to, is to kill, is not to cut anything off, but it's just to completely destroy the plant. Right. So here it's already destroyed. It's not growing anymore. And the fourth definition is to cut off a chibur, some sort of attachment. And let's say it's an attachment which is attached to the ground. It's not just any attachment, but it's an attachment which is connected to the ground. And over here, it's not connected to the ground.
Besides for this one example, is that implied? is that assumed to be the case, that it only a connection to the ground?
Well, we discussed that on Monday, whether it's a connection to the ground or not. We suggested it for the Rambam. It's unclear. It's not clear. I mean, when Rashi says that you need to have an attachment, he doesn't say specifically to the ground. We're going to get to other malachos, like Korea. Korea is ripping. So how do you define ripping? So is that cutting different pieces that are attached together? So it's hard to really... It's a very easy way to differentiate between Kotzer and Korea, for example.
And it would also make the Rambam fit nicely into this halacha.
Yeah, it would fit nicely into this halacha also. It would fit nicely into this halacha also. So therefore, you are, according to this, you would be able to take grapes off of the vine.
Take grapes off the bunch. Not
off the bunch, not the vine, yeah. Not off the bunch which you removed from the vine. Moving right along in terms of these halachos. In the source Beis, this I did quote, right? This is the Shulchan Aruch in Shin Lamed Vav Gimel. A lot of these halachos of Kotzer are found in Shin Lamed Vav. In Aruch Haim Shin Lamed Vav. The Shulchan Aruch says, Mutter Leilech al Gabi Asavim Bein Lachim Bein Yveshim Kevan She'enu Miskavim Litlosh. You are allowed to walk on grass, whether the grass is wet or dry, since you do not have intention to remove the grass. Right? So you're allowed to walk on grass. So even though you, even if you, through walking, it happens to be that you remove some of the grass, but it's still allowed. Now the Mishnah Brura in the next source says as follows. He says, Ayin Bavira Halacha, Shekasavnu, Dehecha Dasavim Him Gedolim. Let's say you have, it's a grass which is very high, they're very tall. Yizahir shelo yoritz alehen da have a psik resha shiyitlosh bevadai. V'asher da filo leilich alehen b'mehera gamkin tzarech lizahir. He says if the grass is very tall, you have to be careful not to run in the grass because it's a psik resha. It's automatically going to happen that it's going to cut the grass. You're going to cut the grass through running. And he says even asher da filo leilich alehen b'mehera, even to run quickly, you should be careful from walking quickly. So I guess there's a difference between walking quickly and running.
But that's only on tall grass.
He says on tall grass, you shouldn't run because it's for sure going to happen. And he says even walking quickly, you should not do. You're refrain from walking quickly. That's what the Mishnah Berurah says. So there are a few questions on this. If you think back to, we discussed this by Chorish and the strollers case. If you remember the strollers case, there are many who were lenient with regard to the strollers and turning the strollers, even though it's going to create some sort of ditch in the ground. Mm-hmm. Why? Well, the reasons for that, they had a whole bunch of different reasons why that was allowed. Even if it's automatic. What?
It was destructive.
Makalko was destructive. You didn't want it. Like, you don't care. You didn't want it. So it's even though it's psikresha, even though it might be psikresha, where it might automatically happen, but it's called a psikresha delonichale. That you don't want it to happen, even if it's automatically going to happen. So that's another reason to be mekel. Another reason is another way to bump it down from a biblical prohibition to rabbinic prohibition is kalachariyad. Something called kalachariyad, which is that it's not your normal way of performing that activity. It's not normal. If you want to cut something from the ground, you don't just run all over it. That's not the normal way to cut something. So therefore, it's only a rabbinic prohibition.
Well, what's the term you used?
Kilachariyad. It's using the back of your hand. Or it's also called the shinoi, just changing. Shinoi means just any change from the normal way that you would do it. So anytime you perform a shinoi, you deviate from the normal way that it's done, so that brings it down to a rabbinic prohibition. So because of all these different reasons, we explain when it comes to the stroller, to the wheelchair, that many say that that's allowed. So there are poskim who want to argue against the Mishnah Berurah to say that even to run on the grass would also be completely permitted, based on all these factors combined together. You have kalach riyad, the fact that you changed it from the normal way. You have psikris delanichalei, the fact that you don't want it. It's destructive. All these things.
All those things. Each one of those arguments on their own would take it from a biblical level to a rabbinic level.
Each one on its own will take it from a biblical level to a rabbinic level. Now, beyond that,
when you have a combination of the three, we're saying there, the rabbanon.
There are those that say that. Yeah,
I mean, forbidden that because it's so. It's been already furthered from a biblical violation by.
So they'll say that it's because you have all these factors together. So therefore, they'll say that it's completely allowed. It's not even rabbinically prohibited. They'll say that it's completely allowed. Yeah.
I still
do. We don't know what the Mishnah Berurah himself said by the case of the wheelchair.
Well, we don't have his case by the wheelchair, but the Bir Halacha did say in the case of the nail in the stick. If you remember, he had a case of the nail in the stick where he was lenient in that case. A person that needs support to walk, which is equivalent to the high heels, which you were supposed to do some sort of test in your class with the.
I spoke to them about it.
They didn't bring in their mother's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So with the stick, which has like a nail on the bottom. So there he added the Bir Halacha. It's one line. So there he says that the Prima Gadim, he quotes from the Prima Gadim, who's not sure about it, I think, and he in the end, or he quotes the Prima Gadim who's Mekel, who's lenient.
It's not
kotzer, it's chorish, because when you put the stick down, you're creating a hole in the ground. It's for your support. You want to have support.
But you could say that that's not destructive, that's constructive, because you're aerating the soil, as opposed to...
Yeah, so they assume there that it's destructive, because even though it's aerating the soil, but
you don't want
that hole, you don't care whether you're aerating the soil.
Goes into the
no, I know, but I guess it's just the very fact, even though there might be an aspect, a constructive aspect to it, but ultimately you don't want your field to be full of holes. Like, just for whatever reason, you're not interested in your field being full of holes. So that's where they're coming from. So that's why they're like the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchosa, which is a big sefer in Hilchos Shabbos. So he argues, and he's mekel when it comes to running on the grass for the same reason that we'll be mekel for the stroller. To push the stroller, so then he'll also be makel in terms of running the grass.
Running on grass is not the same problem as playing soccer, or she said.
Well, soccer is a separate issue. They might level off the field.
Right. So that doesn't apply to just running on the field.
Well, yeah. If you're running, there's no. Yeah. They didn't say that it's usher to run because we're afraid that you're going to want to level off the field.
Because soccer is a game that needs.
Soccer is a game which we assume people want it to be a leveled field. Yeah, correct. They don't even discuss soccer, so I'm not gonna. They're discussing whatever they're discussing, like rolling
marbles.
Yeah.
Presumably, playing a game in a field, you want to play on an even playing field.
That's the assumption. Yeah, that is the assumption.
Any game.
I don't know about any game. I don't know about any game.
It's a very big extension. Playing marbles.
No, marbles is a big extension to soccer. Like, plenty of people play soccer in their backyard and whatever. Like,
marbles can only be played if the ground
is
perfectly flat.
Yeah, that's the big difference between
the
two.
Who's the one that extends it to playing soccer?
I forgot who, but there are definitely those. And there are those that even differentiate between soccer and, let's say, football. Because soccer is the ball's on the ground and football is in the air. So you're saying it's mutter?
I'm saying the more pills and popples there are.
That's harvesting.
If you kill the person.
Yeah.
Form of harvesting.
I don't know if there's an answer to this that would can be discussed within the context of this year, but I don't get particularly nichele at all.
Okay, well... It's an important discussion to have, but... I don't know.
You can just say, like, there's not a simple way to answer that.
What's the concept of psikris delanichalei?
I understand what the concept is trying to say. I don't understand why it has any relevance whatsoever, because in a classic case of Sigurishas, I also don't want the chicken to die.
Right. Oh, so that's your question. Okay, fine. That's,
I don't get why the lo nichale changes anything.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a separate discussion. Just to explain it briefly, because we have a little time. There's a Rav Chanan Wasserman, so he explains psik ration means I do action A, and automatically action B is going to occur.
That you don't want to occur.
No, psikresha de lo nichale is that I don't want action B to occur. But just a regular case of psikresha, let's say you have this case of the grass. I'm running on the grass.
Just for simplicity, the translation of psikresha is to cut off a head.
Right.
So that's the classic case of psikresha is that you cut off the head of the chicken.
And there's a quote in the Gemara, psikresha velo yamos, like you're going to cut its head off and you think it's not going to die.
Right. And the words lo nichale mean that it's not beneficial for me, or I don't want it, or however you want to define that exactly.
First of all, when you cut off the chicken, how do you know you don't want it to shech the chicken?
If you're removing the head, you're not sheching the chicken. But either way, I don't want to have dead chickens. They're not as useful. I want live chickens. As Pasha said, again, and even if you want to say that that's not necessarily true in every case, the Gemara doesn't say that. Psikresha doesn't say it only is psikresha if I want the chicken dead, but if I happen to not want the chicken dead, then it's not.
Well, it's not so clear exactly what the case is, whether it's dealing with the chicken or not, but it's a bigger discussion of what the exact case is. Anyways, but ignoring the actual case, when I do action A, which will automatically lead to action B, so we say that that's biblically prohibited. Like if I run on the grass, and it's going to certainly cause the grass to rip off the ground, so then my action is an action of running. There's a secondary action of the grass being ripped off the ground. So we say that since my action A of running, which is that's what I'm doing, action B is automatically going to occur, which is ripping the grass off the ground. So therefore we say that that's still a biblical prohibition. Even though what I'm doing, I'm just defining as running. I'm going running. But because the grass is automatically going to come off, so therefore it is still biblically prohibited. So they have a discussion, why is it biblically prohibited? What's the reason to say that it's not allowed? So they say, is it that if action A causes action B to occur with 100% certainty, so then maybe I can't view it as two different actions. I'm not doing two different actions, I'm doing one action. That's not, if it's going to happen, so then I'm doing that same action. I'm doing action A and action B. They're both happening. They're with 100% certainty, they're both going to take place. So I'm also doing action B. You can't say it's as though I'm only doing action A of running, but I'm not ripping the grass off. No, it's certainly going to happen. So then I'm also doing that action of ripping off the grass from the ground. That's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is that if I do action A, which will automatically cause action B to occur, those are two separate actions. We view those as two separate actions. It's just that when I have in mind, my intention is to do action A, and automatically action B is going to occur, so my intention for an action A also means that I have intention for action B. Because I intend to run, my intention is to run. Since action B is automatically going to happen, so then I also have intention to rip out the grass. That's also my intention. Right, so they say that if it's automatically going to happen, it's a separate action. The first way of looking at it is just say it's all one action. The second way of looking at it is to say, no, these are two separate actions. You have action A and you have action B. But once I have intention for the first action, so since it's automatically going to happen that the second action will occur, so therefore I have intention also for that second action. Yeah, you got those two different ways of looking at it?
Mm.
So they explain that what would be the difference between these two ways of looking at it? It would be a case of psik resha de lo nichale. Let's say I don't want the second action to happen. I'm not interested in that second action to happen. So you could argue this.
Like the light in the refrigerator, for example.
I think the light in the refrigerator people want. That's particularly
the
nickel.
Might be the grass, cutting the grass.
The grass, the case of the grass, where you're running and you don't care about the grass. Let's say you don't want the grass to rip. Not just you don't care, you prefer the grass to stay there.
Well, they say
and it's destructive. I mean, you prefer for the grass to be there.
Well, they say
it's not just that you don't want it.
They say it's the same thing if your neighbor has a light that automatically turns on. Even if I don't want the light, the street's well lit and I can see plenty, I can see fine without it, then it's superficial and nifle, and it's okay to walk by. I've heard, not everyone says the same thing, but yeah, I've heard people say that as well.
I don't know about that, guys. Yeah. I would like to see an original source for that. I do.
I'll have to ask Ronnie, because I try to avoid it anyways. But
since I've gotten here, this is not the first time that I've heard this.
I've been told that there's room to be magel because of psychic ritual and filet, assuming you could see anyways.
You have to almost be natural, because otherwise,
You for sure want it. You for sure want the light, even if you could already see in the dark. But it definitely helps you.
No, but it's almost impossible. You don't know where the lights are. But B,
no, that's fine. That's fine.
Light, so like you'd be walking.
No, but let's say you do know. Let's say you do know. The case is, let's say you do know.
It's like if the guy next door to you has a light, you learn that pretty quickly.
Yeah.
It's a problem that I actually have, because
we're
in a basement suite and there's a light on next to the garage. So if I come in through the back, which is the most direct way to get to my door, the light goes on. I have to go around to the front of the house and come to not set off the light. So I try to come around to the front of the house, if at all possible, to avoid the issue. But I've been told, again, that there's room to be makeup.
No, there is definitely room for other reasons to be makeup. I'm not saying there isn't room to be makeup. I'm saying for other reasons there might be room. Anyways. So if let's say you have in mind, you don't want that second action to take place. You don't want the grass to rip out. It's your field. You prefer the grass stays in the field. You don't want it to happen. So if I say that action A automatically causes action B, that means that it's all the same action. I can't call that two different actions. It's automatically going to happen. So then the fact that I don't want it to happen shouldn't impact anything. It's all the same action. But if I view it as though my intention for action A, if it automatically will lead to action B, means that I also have intention for action B. Well, if I don't want action B to happen, you could argue this, but there are those that say, if I don't want action B to happen, so then you can't say that it's as though I have intention for action B. I don't want that action, I don't want that to take place. I prefer for it not to take place. So then I can't view it as though my intention is for that second action to take place. And so therefore my intention is only for that first action of running, but not for the action of ripping out the grass. So that's how, that's why it wouldn't be a biblical prohibition, it would just be a rabbinic prohibition. The way we pass it, it's a rabbinic prohibition. There's three different opinions.
Mm-hmm.
This is normal Judaism here, where we have three different opinions. One says that it's completely allowed. One says that there are those that say that it's a rabbinic prohibition, and those that say that it's a biblical prohibition.
That's the answer for just about everything.
Yeah, that's the answer for just about everything, yeah. So we pass on that it's a rabbinic prohibition. Okay, moving.
Out of interest, do you walk on the grass on Shabbos?
Well, this is only in a case where it's automatically going to happen.
Right.
Most of the time, it's not automatic that it's going to happen.
You're walking, he says, for sure it's running. He's walking quickly in tall grass, that he says, or running in grass.
He doesn't even say running in grass.
Well, walking quickly.
Like saying running. Running or walking quickly in tall grass.
In tall grass. I think they're both in tall grass.
Isn't that much more?
I think he's running versus walking quickly, both in tall grass.
Because I've definitely been with rabbis in this city who won't walk across a field.
They won't walk.
Won't walk across a field on Shabbos.
Yeah. So the Shmir Shabbos asks. He asks a quite further question. How is it in the Mishnah? He's just not sure what the Mishnah Berurah's case is, where it's automatically going to happen that you're going to rip grass. Like, how is it automatic that this is going to happen? When I walk on a field, it's not like every step that I take, it's going to rip the grass. It doesn't happen. So.
I'm talking about like dry grass.
And by dry grass, every step you take, it rips out the grass.
It's brittle, so it does snap. Yeah.
So there are the
really?
Shulchan Aruch says one is permitted to walk on grass whether it is dry or wet.
Yes, the Mishnah Berurah is commenting, so it could be that he's only commenting on the
that opinion that he doesn't hold of?
No, he's discussing where it's tall grass. The Mishnah Berurah, the Shulchan Aruch permits it on.
Right, but in Shin Lamed Vav Gimel, he says
it's allowed.
Right, right.
So he only
prohibits
it in a case where it's for sure going to happen, like in tall grass.
Right.
So in the case of tall grass, they even ask further, like, why is every single step that I'm going to take, why is that viewed as automatically going to take place? Who says that every step that I take, it's going to cause the grass to come out?
It's not every step, but within your walking, it's for sure going
to
rip.
Ah.
How many steps so that's what, take that's what, to be considered?
Rabbi Lichtman's Mechavin, Rabbi Lichtman's saying the same explanation as Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman says that you, even though each step might not cause the grass to come out, it will for sure happen that over the course of your walk across the field, that you will rip something out. Something will rip out.
How many steps do you have to take for that to count? Like, it's a very vague.
It is a vague. But let's say you know that if you go across this specific field, you have to know each field is different. You just have to know for every scenario that this will for sure cause some grass to come out.
Even though each step is as a mutter.
Yeah, so that's why others even argue further on the Mishnah Berurah, and they say, well, who says that we're going to define it based on the end result of my 20 steps? Why is that called a psik ratio, that it's automatically going to happen? Why don't I just view it as each step individually? What?
You stop, you stand, you stop. Oh, okay, I think I want to take another step now. Will it tear grass? Not necessarily. I can take another step.
For each step, it's a question. Each step is a question. So it shouldn't be a psik ratio. It's an automatic. We shouldn't view it as though it's automatically happening. Every single step. So there are others who even argue that even in the Mishnah Berurah's case, where it's psik ratio, it's automatically going to happen over the course of the field. But who says it's going to happen for each step? And maybe we should focus on each step instead of focusing on the entire field. So that's why there are those who are lenient. There are those here who won't walk on grass?
Yeah.
At all? On any grass?
Well, if like we're walking, and clearly, you know, we've got to get diagonally across the field, and I'm ready to just go right across.
They won't.
We're going to go.
Okay.
Stay on the sidewalk.
I haven't met that person.
Yeah, yeah.
This is, we're recording here. I'm just warning you. It might not be like as, because they hold that it's usher, it could just be like a chumrah, a stringency that they're taking upon themselves.
Yeah. It also could be because they don't want to get their dress shoes dirty.
Exactly.
Did they tell you that the reason is because of...
No, they didn't.
They didn't say the reason. No, so that's probably the reason.
You got wooden heels, you'll sink. It's annoying.
Okay. Let's get to the next case. The Shulchan Aruch says that... I didn't quote the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says that not only is it prohibited to remove a plant from a part of a plant from a perforated pot, or to pick up a perforated pot and to move it, but even when it comes to a non-perforated pot, to move it from the soil, even if it's a non-perforated pot, there are no holes in the bottom, it would still be completely usur. It would be usur to move something from, even if it's a non-perforated pot, to then go ahead and move it. So the question is, why?
I mean, so it's not taking it out of the pot. We're talking about moving the pot.
It's on soil, and you're moving the pot from...
But you're not taking the plant out of the pot.
No, you're not taking the plant out of the pot. No, that would be prohibited because it's with the soil. But we're just moving the pot itself. It's on soil. You're moving the pot. If it's a perforated pot, so I understand, because now I'm removing it from its source of nourishment. But if it's a non-perforated pot, so it has no connection to the ground, so then why would that be prohibited? So this really gets back to what we were discussing on Monday and also last week. When you have a case of a perforated pot, to then move that a little bit, is that a biblical prohibition or is that a rabbinic prohibition?
Because you're not removing it.
Because you're not removing it completely from its source of nourishment, assuming that that's the case. You're just moving it, let's say you're lifting it to a tripod or something. On pegs. So that might not be a biblical prohibition. The Rambam says that it is a biblical prohibition because once you lifted it off, let's say his understanding of kotzer is that you have to detach and something which is attached. Since it's attached to the ground, it's a perforated pot which is attached to the ground, by lifting it, I violated a biblical prohibition.
What if you drag it along the ground and it's never removed from it?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I'm not sure. It's an interesting question.
Well, then you plow it. I don't really follow. I would have thought. Can you just repeat the reason?
No, I haven't explained the reason yet. So that was all by a perforated pot. Right. The Rambam says that it's a biblical prohibition to lift it off the ground. because I've now detached it from the from its source of nourishment.
Even if it's only been there, if it has not been there long enough for the roots to go through.
Yeah, even so.
No, but then would it be like a perforated pot?
Yeah, non-perforated. So sorry, I apologize. A perforated pot, which gets its source of nourishment, for me to lift it is a biblical prohibition, according to Rambam. So you can explain for the Rambam, therefore, a non-perforated pot is forbidden on a rabbinic level, because people will get confused between the two.
What do you mean confused?
Meaning if people will think, well, if I'm allowed to lift a non-perforated pot from the ground, I'm also allowed to move a perforated pot from the ground. People will just get confused.
Okay. So a gezeira on the
So it'll be a gezeira on this biblical prohibition. But if you say that, like the way we paskin, is like the other opinion, Rashi and Tosus would say that it's by a perforated pot, it's only a rabbinic prohibition. If it's a rabbinic prohibition, so then there's a concept of that we don't say gzera l'gzera. If it's already a rabbinic prohibition, we're not going to add on another rabbinic prohibition to an already existing rabbinic prohibition. It itself is only a rabbinic prohibition. It's not a biblical prohibition. So I'm not going to say, well, let's add on another rabbinic prohibition. So this is where the Bir Halacha comes in. If you look at the last source on page 1, he says, and the translation is on page 2, Elavadai desvir lela mechaber sham kishitas Rashi b'tosu sham u'kamashi kosev amagin avram sham. I'm in the middle of the Bir Halacha, but he says that we hold like Rashi and Tosos. Rashi and Tosos hold that even by a perforated pot, it's only a rabbinic prohibition. So why would it be prohibited by a non-perforated pot? So he says el hanachon kamashi kosev agra dechashash l'shitas hasovrim deechad mehani kelim eno nakov kenakov damyum. The Gra, he quotes the Gra, who's concerned that even though it's a non-perforated pot, the concern is that maybe there is some sort of perforation there. Maybe there is a hole there. We just don't know. And if there's a hole there, so then that's a real concern. On a rabbinic level, but that's a real concern. So we're afraid that there might be a hole in that non-perforated...
That's not called a gezeira l'gezeira?
No, because that's just...
Really, there's nothing wrong with a non-perforated pot.
No, but we're concerned that it's really perforated. Meaning, gzeira l'gzeira is to say that another case which is completely allowed will say that because you'll get confused between the actual case which is prohibited, we will also say that this other case, which is perfectly allowed, will also prohibit that. But in this case, if it's true that it's a perforated pot, so then there is a rabbinic prohibition here. This is we're concerned that this, that we are lacking the correct knowledge as to what's going on with this pot.
We think it's not perforated.
We think it's not perforated, but really it is perforated. So that's different.
How do you read this?
One of these non-perforated pots, enunakov, kinakov damya. So the way, I think the way, not just me, but also like the later poskim.
That doesn't sound like what you're saying.
It's vague. Enunakov, kinakov damya is that With one of these pots, which is non-perforated, it's as if it's perforated. That's the literal translation. It's as if it's perforated. So I think the way some of the later, I can tell you who, some of the later commentators explain it, is that we're afraid that it is it itself is perforated. That we're concerned.
Sounds like he's saying that they're one and the same. Maybe because it's made out of earthenware.
It could be that maybe it's also made out of.
That's more what it is.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. That it's made out of earthenware. I apologize. Yeah, that it's made out of earthenware. So that itself is a concern that it's that itself is perforated, or like it's perforated. Yeah.
Because,
no, you're right. Because it itself is earthenware.
If it's in a damp soil, it'll absorb the dampness, and that will.
If it's earthenware.
If it's yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So you're right. You're right.
Than
yeah.
That.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, sorry. Yeah, so, you're right, you're right.
Well, the Hebrew and English here say very different things.
Well, the English is me.
The English says, rather, we are concerned that one of the pots does have a hole.
Yeah, that was me.
Whereas the Hebrew says, this is Mehani Kelim in and of Kinako Dami.
Yeah, that it's like it has a hole. Oh, sorry, Rabbi Lichtman's right. It's that...
Scratched English.
It's that it itself, because it's earthenware, so therefore it is in fact perforated, yeah. Which is
so
100% right. Which is why they say
if you have a glazed pot,
That's what they say after that. If it's a glazed pot, or if it's like a metal pot or a plastic pot, so then it would be completely loud. It would be completely loud. we did point out last time that if something is lifted from the ground, even if there's a lot of airspace in between, we're still concerned that nourishment is going to transfer. Yeah, but halakhically, we assume as such. Mm-hmm. You're probably not going to say the following as well. Mm-hmm. But the based on that idea, the Chazan Ish does have a stringency to say that if you live in a building where the floors are earthenware floors.
Okay.
I don't know what a situation like that would be. But if you have
clay tiles.
Yeah, clay tiles, unglazed.
Unglazed, it has to be unglazed, unglazed clay tiles. Yeah. I don't know if such a situation exists. If you have unglazed clay tiles.
Like terracotta, maybe.
Yeah? So then even if you're on the second floor or the third floor, he's still concerned if you have a plant that's also in an earthenware pot
sitting
there, so then to lift it would be a problem.
Right. What about the ceiling in between?
I was going to say, yeah, there would all be right. some...
You would have to have... Yeah, the situation would have to be where there's nothing, absolutely nothing... I'm not sure what the situation is.
It doesn't sound structurally sound to just have...
It's possible. He says it. It might be that the situation just doesn't exist.
I heard that nervous is so, like, to get out of Erla issues. So when there's a halacha that you can't eat the fruit from a tree in its first 3 years.
Right.
So if you grow the tree in a nursery for the first year, and then you pick it up and you plant it somewhere else, so you have to start your years again.
Oh, yeah?
So one of the things that I heard that they do is they transport it on trucks that have perforated bottoms so that it's never disconnected from the ground.
Even though the trucks are rubber tires.
I think it goes over dirt roads. I don't know exactly how it works, but.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I never saw it, but I heard that such a thing happens.
I guess rubber tires are technically porous, even though they're vulcanized.
Well, it's not by the tires.
Well, the tires are the only thing touching the dirt.
But there's nothing.
No, but where the pots are.
The pots are touching the bed of the truck, which is perforated.
Yeah.
Mounted on an axle, and the axle has the tires which are touching the ground.
Yeah.
And the axle's metal and the tires are rubber.
But it's not over the axle.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be over the axle.
The bed isn't touching the ground.
It doesn't have to be because of this concept that it's still getting its nourishment from the ground.
Which is
because there's nothing in between.
If it's not touching the ground at all?
Yeah, that's this concept.
The bottom of the is still
nourishment goes up.
Yeah.
Okay, that was what I missed. The pot on stilts is still considered getting nourishment from the ground.
Yeah, that's what the assumption is.
That's the assumption.
Okay.
It doesn't make a difference what the height of the stilts are.
Yeah, it doesn't make a difference. That's why the Chazon Ish was saying even by the second floor of a building. What?
What is that?
The Chazon Ish says even by the second floor of a building, right. We would be concerned. It doesn't make a difference how high it is. Okay, that's
the difference, because the second floor of the ground, he'll argue, is still attached to the wall, which is still attached to the ground floor.
Yeah, but it's not about it being attached to the ground, it's about it getting nourishment from the ground.
If you're on like the 10th story of a building and you have one of those flower pots that hang over the railing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So then it's directly above the ground. So that would be some, I mean, however.
I guess so.
I guess so. Yeah, because those flower pots are also usually made of clay.
Make sure that if you have those planters, make sure it's in a plastic or metal or glazed flower pot.
Remember not to move it, I'm sorry.
Okay, so that's all in terms of the biblical prohibition. We've been discussing now the biblical prohibition. Now let's get into rabbinic prohibitions. Well, this non-perforated pot was also a rabbinic prohibition. But let's now get into other rabbinic prohibitions, which they said you're not allowed to do because we're afraid that you're then going to remove a branch from the tree. So there's a whole list of rabbinic prohibitions which are forbidden because we're afraid that you're going to end up cutting something off the tree. So if you go to the fifth source here, which is on the second page, Hadas Mechubar, if you have a Hadas, which is attached, Mutar L'Harichbo, you're allowed to smell it. You're allowed to smell the Hadas. But anything which is edible, the hadas is not edible. You just you smell the hadas. It's not edible. You're not gonna pluck it off the tree to whatever it is to eat it. But when it comes to an esrog or a tapuach, to an esrog or to an apple, anything which is edible, you're not allowed to smell it because you're afraid that you're going to end up plucking it off the tree. So therefore,
that would apply to roses, fragrant flowers.
It would not apply.
It would apply.
It's not edible.
But I'd take the rose home and give it to my wife.
That it's
or
edible,
whatever.
Or is it that you're inclined to cut it off?
Yeah, so that's what they discuss. Why? Because you would be inclined to cut off the roses.
Maybe. I mean.
Yeah, so that's what they discuss. There is the Orchel Shabbos, which is also a big sefer in Orchel Shabbos. So he says that if it's the type of flower where you would be inclined to cut it off because you want to have such a flower like roses, mm-hmm. so then it would also be forbidden to smell that. Mm. Yeah. You were about to, you were going to ask?
No, I was agreeing.
Wait. To say that would be forbidden.
Which, right, you would, I was just agreeing with the idea that you'd be inclined to
pluck
a flower.
To pluck
like
the flower off. Yeah. Exactly.
Unless you can't stop and smell the roses.
Unless they're already cut off.
Unless they're already cut off.
Yeah.
My son, who's now 25, admitted something to me recently. And the admission was that...
I don't want to hear this.
Yeah.
Listen. When we were at a shul in Richmond, they had low-hanging plums. And on Shabbos, what him and his mates would do is they would bend the tree, bend the branch, and eat the plum without picking it off the tree.
I was not even going to get into this halacha because I don't think people do this. But you're also, first of all, I don't believe that because you're not allowed to, because it's not allowed. So the Magen Avraham, who's a big commentator on the Shulchan Aruch, he extends, he says that it is forbidden to also to eat the fruit from the tree directly. Is also, it's a form of kotzer. He says it's only a rabbinic prohibition. It's not biblical because it's not the normal way to eat, except in certain circles. But in most circles, it's not the normal way to eat. So therefore, it's only a rabbinic prohibition. It's not a biblical prohibition. But why wouldn't that fall under kotzer? That should fall under kotzer.
You're removing the part
which is getting nourishment from the ground, and now it's in your mouth. Mm-hmm.
Tell him it was a good try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He tried his best.
Oh, he didn't succeed.
No, he tried his best to observe.
To observe, while eating it.
Maybe before the bar mitzvah. Before the bar
mitzvah. Yeah, yeah.
It's a clear assumption. He's a kid.
Fruit which gets detached from a tree on Shabbos is also forbidden to use that. And there are two different reasons which are given for that. It was detached on Shabbos.
Yeah.
It fell off on Shabbos. Uh-huh. So one reason is just because it's muktzah, because mm-hmm. since from the onset of Shabbos, you weren't allowed to use it because it was attached to the tree, so that defined it as unusable for the rest of Shabbos. Mm-hmm. That's one reason. But there is another reason which is given, which is that if you have fruit which has fell off the tree, we're afraid that if you eat that fruit, you're going to end up removing other fruit which are already on the tree, mm-hmm. which are still on the tree. That you're going to end up removing those as well.
But you are allowed to eat a fruit that's on the ground that fell off on Friday?
Yes.
For some reason I thought you weren't. I'm not sure.
You are allowed to. There's
You can't gather them. I thought you just can't pick one up and pop it in.
You're allowed to take individual ones. But you cannot...
Don't gather it.
You cannot gather it, yeah.
And if it was on the tree on Shabbos and falls off on Shabbos... You could eat it the next day.
Yeah, for sure.
And you don't have to see it fall on Shabbos. If there's a fruit under the tree on Shabbos, do you have to...
Oh, so let's say you're not sure. This is a big question. So let's say you're not sure when it fell. When did it fall? So this is now it's a Suffolk Durabanan. On a Suffolk, on a doubtful situation, which is a rabbinic prohibition, in general we say that we are mekel, that we're lenient. Mm-hmm. It gets a little more confusing. I think in the end we say that it is allowed. It gets more confusing. There's a concept called davar sheishlo matirin, which is basically an idea that even though it might be allowed now, but since it will certainly be allowed after Shabbos, mm-hmm. so then maybe we should be stringent and say just hold off till after Shabbos. Mm-hmm. Because it's a doubtful situation, so maybe we should hold off till after Shabbos. But I believe, give me one second, I believe we say that we're mekel in that case also.
Because by the end of Shabbos, somebody...
No, sorry, we say that it's not allowed. I apologize. Mm. It's not allowed. The Shaar HaTzion says it's not. That case would not be allowed.
So unless you specifically saw it fall on Friday, or...
Well, I don't know. I don't know. The question is, how much of a doubt do you need?
Well, does it come down to, like, just statistics? Let's say there were tons of fruit under the tree before Shabbos. There are probably a few more now on Shabbos as well, because, you know, there's...
So that's a big discussion. That's a big discussion. Rove, the Dabar Shish Matirin, that's a bigger discussion.
It's not a particularly windy day, maybe, so you don't assume that it just got blown in.
Yeah. All right, it is a bigger discussion. We have a few more cases, so... And these are important. These do apply. The following cases. The next Shulchan Aruch is Shin Lamed Vav Aleph, in source 6. Ein Olin BeIlon. You're not allowed to climb a tree. Bein Lach Bein Yavesh. Whether it's a dry or wet tree. Ve'ein Nitlin Bo Ve'ein Mishdamshin B'Mechuber LeKarka Klal. You're also not allowed to hang from the tree, and you're not allowed to use the tree in any way or anything which is connected to the ground. Why? Because we're afraid that you're going to end up, once you're already dealing with the tree, we're afraid that you're going to just easily snap a branch off the tree. If you went on the tree on Shabbos, so b'shogeg mutter leirid, if you did it by accident, or you didn't know that it was forbidden, so then we allow you to come down from the tree. B'mezid, but if you intentionally, knowingly, understanding that this is a violation on Shabbos, so then asher leirid, you're not allowed to come down from the tree. Throughout Shabbos.
Why would you observe that?
That was the question you asked there, right? Why would you observe that as well? So I assume you got like some inspiring speech while you were up there on the tree about keeping Shabbos.
No, it could be passively. You climb up the tree, not
but on purpose.
On purpose, but
knowing that you're violating Shabbos.
But there are no witnesses to tell you. Now two witnesses come by, they see you in the tree, and now they tell you can't come down now. If you come down.
No, oh, this is a rabbinic prohibition. It's all a rabbinic prohibition. It's all a rabbinic prohibition.
It's odd that you are allowed to climb down if it's by accident, because by climbing down, you are going to snap off branches the same way you did by
that's
climbing
a great
up.
Point. That's a great point. This is not really... this is the discussion they have. There's a rabbinic prohibition to use the tree. So they say that what does it mean to use the tree? So climbing is for sure using the tree. So they say sitting on the tree also is called using the tree. So the entire time you're up there, you are using the tree. So they say, if you did it by accident, so we'll let you come down. Because you're using the tree regardless. Whether you're climbing down the tree or you're sitting on the tree, you're using the tree. So we will let you come down. But if you intentionally did it, so then we're not going to let you climb down and continue to use the tree. How does it be sitting on the tree? It's also using the tree, but I guess that's more of a passive state of using the tree, as opposed to more of that active state of climbing down. But either way, it's using the tree. But if you did it...
There's a chance that you're going to break a branch.
If you're climbing down.
If you're sitting there all Shabbos, it's more likely that you're going to break something.
Why? Well, I have, like, anger?
That sounds good to say the longer you're in the tree, the more likely you are to break it. But I would say the contrary. The more you move around in the tree, the more likely you are to break something. So if you're actually sitting still...
We're talking about someone who's breaking something by accident. You're talking about someone who's intentionally going...
No, but it's because they're not thinking about it. We're afraid that they're not thinking about it.
We're afraid that they're going to take a step and break the branch.
I thought that part of the problem...
No, I don't know. It might just be that you're using the tree.
You'll break branches while you're climbing.
Yeah, not intentionally.
Oh, while up here, that branch looks so healthy. Let me crack it.
Yeah, I don't think that's it. I think you're just climbing the tree, and so you might...
It's not a psikratia if you're going to break something.
No, it's not a psikratia. It's not a psikratia.
It's a dry tree, kind of.
Why would we make...
Why would we make this rabbinic prohibition? So you're saying the cases where you see a branch that you want to break?
And that's what I thought. The prohibition is that if you're using a tree, you're going
you might
break it.
That actually does make sense, because it would be particularly
the Yeah, yeah. So let's say you would use it, but you're not having in mind to violate Shabbos at the time, though. It might just be that you forgot about Shabbos, and you're going to go ahead and snap the branch off. That would be the...
If you're using the tree.
Yeah.
So that's why it makes sense.
Yeah. Now, it's important to know the Bir Lacha does say, even if you did this intentionally, there are two situations where you're allowed to come down. One situation is where the weather changes, and it's getting cold. So we'll let you come down. And the second...
Why would that allow leniency?
Is it cold enough to be an actual danger of like...
The whole thing is just a knas. We are we're causing this. It's a fine. It's a penalty.
Is this the only place in Hell of the Shadows that we find such a fine?
I can't answer that.
Is this the only place that you find such a case?
I would have to think about it. I'd have to think about it. Yeah, it's a strange idea. But I'll try to think about that. I mean, so one case is for sure when.
I wonder if you'd say it by standing in front of the urinal. Right, they say that if you didn't realize, but you're allowed to leave because it's like not Chava Chavez be standing there. But like if you
don't call it a bridge.
Right. But if you did it on purpose, maybe.
1 second.
You can stand there the rest of the day.
Yeah. So if the weather changes, you're allowed to come down, and also if you have to go to the bathroom, so you're allowed to come down. So chances are you're not staying there all Shabbos.
But
unless you went up like Shabbos afternoon.
So it doesn't have to be cold enough to be like a risk of hypothermia. It just has to be cold enough to be uncomfortable.
I think so. There has to be a change of weather, from what I understand, where it becomes cold or windy. Oh, he'll get sick. He has to get sick.
Oh, so
it's not meaning it changes to
a. So meaning it's not. It's not therefore like
that could get sick. Yeah.
It's not like, oh, that's enough punishment, we'll let you down.
No,
it's
only punitive.
It's because we're actually concerned that you'll
get sick. We're concerned that you'll get sick.
The same thing with using the washroom. It's because it's unhealthy.
Yes, correct.
You have to sit there and wait. Exactly. Not because you're uncomfortable.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. The Shulchan Aruch goes on. He says, "V'im let's say you went up on Friday. B'chol gavna mutter leirin mishach hashicha. If you went up on Friday, so then you're allowed to come down. And you stayed up through Shabbos. You're allowed to come down. But then he quotes another opinion. V'yish omrim, dahani milik shahaya daitu leirin mibod yom. Some say that it's only if you had in mind to come down before Shabbos started, and you forgot to come down. You stayed in the tree. Aval lo haya daitu leirin mibod yom lo yirin mishach hashicha. But if you always had intention to stay there, even after Shabbos started, so then you cannot come down. Because you intended to stay there at a time where it's forbidden to be there, so therefore you are not allowed to come down. The same penalty would apply. But there is the first opinion which says that you're allowed to come down no matter what. And I believe the Mishnah Berurah says that we pass on like the first opinion, that you're allowed to come down no matter what. Once you go up on Friday afternoon, it also sounds like that from the Shulchan Aruch. His main opinion is to say that you are allowed to come down, and then he says there are others, Yesh Omrim, there are others that say that if you had in mind to stay up there, so then you're not allowed to come down. But
which doesn't make sense, because it's the exact same thing that we're punishing you for if you climbed up on purpose on Shabbos. We're punishing you for willfully.
Yeah. You're saying the second opinion doesn't make sense.
Right.
Yeah, if you intended to stay up there, correct. So now the Ramah, there's an important Ramah. The Ramah says, V'dafka adam sha'ala sham. This is only with regards to a person. If a person goes up there, he's allowed to come down. But if you ever have an object which is there from before Shabbos, and certainly on Shabbos, you are not allowed to remove that object from the tree. So you're not allowed to remove objects. Let's say you have a soccer ball, which is in the tree, or in the bushes. You would not be allowed to remove it from the tree.
So I had a student who came to my house, and the kids were playing ball on the back. Shoes that were a little too big on him, and he kicked, and his shoe went flying into a bush.
He
had to take it out.
You're not supposed to take it out,
yeah. He walked on barefoot.
Did he really? He walked on barefoot?
No, he found the
barefoot. Yeah.
Even if you don't have to climb the tree to get it, you can't just reach over and.
Yeah, it's anytime it's on a. It could be on a bush, it could be on a tree.
You have to walk on barefoot.
Why did you have to walk on?
I'm saying he doesn't know.
We do say, they do differentiate, they say, I don't really understand the exact difference, but they say that, let's say you're walking home, some people walk home with their talus on, and if your talus, let's say, gets tangled up in a tree, you're walking and it hits a tree, so they say you are allowed to move your talus, but let's say if your yarmulke, and the wind blows your yarmulke into the tree, so then you're not supposed to pick up your yarmulke. I guess by the talus, it's not directly on the tree, it just gets entangled by the branches.
It's mostly unused though.
It's what?
The talus is mostly unused though. It's just tangled in the tree.
Yeah, I guess it's mostly unused, so it's not completely
just
on the tree.
It's not resting on it. It's tangled into it,
so it's not resting. Yeah, I guess that's the difference between the two.
I would say that makes it worse, not better. If it's tangled in instead of just resting on it, you wouldn't think that makes it better.
You're definitely
going to rip something while you're pulling your.
Yeah, but it might just be that the way they instituted the gezeira, like the way they instituted was anything on the tree. and not something which is tangled in it. So you might be right that there might be more of a chance, but depending on how they formulated that
zera,
so that it's something which is on the tree.
We did the last halacha.
Yeah, let's do this last halacha and then we'll stop.
The wine went to the field of swine.
Yeah, so we're going to get to it. Actually, the field of swine we're going to get to. Give me 1 second. I want to find where I put the field of swine here. Okay, so we say also lishdamish b'tzadei ilan. You're not allowed to use the sides of the tree. Aval b'tzadei tzadin mutter. But to use the sides of the sides, that's allowed. So now he's going to explain what does it mean the sides of the sides. What does that mean? Lefichach also lismo chasulam l'tzidei ha'ilan d'chisalek be mishdamish b'tzadin. You're not allowed to place a ladder on the tree. Directly on the tree, you're not allowed to place a ladder. It's interesting why he says, he explains why. Why? Because when you remove it, you're then now using the tree. When you remove the ladder, apparently placing the ladder is not using the tree, but removing the ladder is using the tree. You're now being mishtamish b'ilan. You're using the tree, I guess, when you remove it. That's not my main focus here. Avam yesh yesed tikua b'tzadeh ha'ilan mutter lismoch sulam alav. But what's tzadeh tzadim, which is allowed, sides of a side? Let's say the ladder is not leaning on the tree directly, but it's leaning on pegs which were placed into the tree. So the pegs are viewed as a barrier between the ladder and the tree. So then you would be allowed to place the ladder on those pegs. That's what studded southern is. If there's like something indirectly, which is you're not directly touching the tree, but you're indirectly touching the tree, so then that would be allowed. And then it says Sotu explains because the Havla Yasid Studdin, Visulam Tzidei Tzadim. Because the peg is the first tzad, that's the peg is what's connected to the tree, and then the tsulam, that ladder, is indirectly connected to the tree. Similarly, if you were to have a peg and you would have a basket just on the peg itself, if you have a peg with the basket is hanging on the peg, so then you're allowed to move the basket from the tree and back onto the tree. But to put a basket just on the actual branch would be a problem. To put it on the branch would be a problem.
So, for example, if I wanted to hang my suit jacket, I have a hanger with my suit jacket, put it on a tree branch, that I can't do.
But if you have the hanger there to begin with.
The hanger was there before Shabbos, now I can hang my jacket on the
yeah. Hanger. So if anybody wants to do that, you can have to put your hanger before Shabbos.
Right. I'm going to put one out tonight.
Do you do that?
Yeah, but you have to be careful not to, because it's very difficult to hang a jacket on a hanger
without taking it off and putting it back on.
Yeah, I do it at Shari Tzedek all the time.
So what happens, if this happens often, let's say you have a case of
a hammock,
yeah. So a hammock, could you rest on a hammock on Shabbos?
If there's pegs on the tree that the hammock's hanging on.
Then that would be allowed.
Well, assuming the concern is that you'll see a branch that you want to remove from the tree, that's not a relevant concern with the hammock.
It's true, but once they formulated the takana as such, they said that the takana is anything which is attached to the tree, so then regardless of whether there's a high level concern or a low level concern, it's just forbidden. If it's based on the concern, so then each person will just decide into themselves, this is a case which is a concern, this is a case which isn't a concern.
We do say this is a situation that raises cause for concern. So even if you yourself might not be the type of person, it's okay for you, but it's also for everyone else, right?
No, but even so, but there are a lot of gray areas. So once they formulate it as such, we'll say all such cases are forbidden.
So same for a kid's treehouse? They're climbing the rope ladder.
A kid's treehouse would be a problem, yeah. A kid's treehouse. It's directly on it. I think even there are those that say a treehouse, even if it's not directly on it.
Because oftentimes it's...
The 39, the Lama Tes Malachos. There's a sefer called the 39 Malachos.
Treehouse, right?
So he says, what did you say?
Swiss Family Robinson Family.
There's a book.
With the treehouse?
Stranded on an island.
There are those that say a treehouse, even if it's not directly on the tree, but it's in the tree, they say that that's forbidden anyways. Because that's
So that's a hammock really... is likely to be attached to a tree with a rope. There's usually a rope around the tree.
Yeah, and we're going to get about to get to Phil's house.
And the hammock is connected to the rope.
Well, or what part is connected to the rope? How is it connected to the rope?
Well, usually the hammock has a chain, say.
So it's a chain, right? There's right. a chain set
the
which
chain
then
is
connects
attached to, a cha-
to the rope.
It's attached to a chain, and the chain is attached to a rope.
Or is it a rope tied around the tree, or is it like a metal
you,
eye
you
hook
could,
that
you
screw into the side of the tree?
You could even ask actually a standard swing, right? A standard swing has two ropes, even if
yeah.
you tie directly to, this, to
yeah.
the tree. So
yeah.
the two ropes are coming down, and those ropes are tied or somehow fastened to the seat of the swing.
Yeah.
So, do you view the seat and the ropes as separate entities?
But you're holding on to the ropes, though, when you
No, you're
swing.
Holding on to the ropes, yeah.
That's true.
Hold on to the ropes.
So, the field swing is a little bit different. Because the field swing has ropes going around the tree. And then you get down, there are metal hooks attached to the rope, and then another rope that hangs down from those uh-huh. hooks.
I think that... in terms of your case, so they quote Ramosha for your case of the hammock, and they say that it's all viewed as one.
Uh-huh.
They say that it's all viewed as one. But that, I could hear a difference, because that, it has a rope, and then there's a hook, and then there's another rope. So that already differentiates between
the two ropes.
Well,
you have the hook,
right,
which
in my
differentiates.
Case, the hammock, the chain, which is attached to the hammock, has a hook on the chain, and that hook hooks onto the rope attached to the tree.
Yes, I guess it would be parallel. I guess it would be parallel. So I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
Ramosha discusses one case. I have to look back to the exact language that's used in that case.
What is this case?
He just says you have a chain which is around a tree, which then is connected to other chains, but it's a different style of a chain. It's not
mm-hmm.
like
mm-hmm.
but those are all chains, so it might be a little different.
Mm-hmm.
I could see differentiating between these cases.
Sometimes you can like by looking at it, it's clearly a different bit. Sometimes it just looks like the same thing, just with like
sometimes it looks different.
It's like a ring in the middle.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's like, well, that's a rope and that's a chain.
That's so that's what I'm not sure about in those cases.
Like,
in those cases, I'm not sure about. Mm-hmm. Anyways, that ends Kotzer. Those are, I think, most of the practical applications for Kotzer. Next week we are moving on to Hanukkah.
I'm still not sure.